one young lady said to her dad, "Daddy, your anger hurts me." And she said, "And when I told my dad that, he said, 'You will not see me do that again.'" And she said, to her remembrance, he didn't do that again. I said, "I want to be like that dad who was able to make that commitment." Because you can do so many things right as a dad, but anger will wipe it all out, period. I've learned that if there's, you can be wonderful in so many ways, but if you don't manage anger, it will wipe out your account every time.
When I think about doing a Father's Day special, I knew I had to find my friend Chris Hogan. And I've caught up with him in the Carolinas, and I am so glad to have you on board. Hello, Chris Hogan.
Well, Gail, it is always fun and energizing to talk to you.
Chris is one of those guys that after you talk with him, at least for me, I get new ideas. I'm inspired. I start thinking outside the box, and I love that. There's just something he ignites within me. And Chris and Ann Hogan are so special to Tony and myself because we met them before they were married. How many years ago is that?
That was 25 years ago.
No way. No way. But you will soon understand why Chris Hogan had to be part of this special Father's Day program. Because, Chris, you and Ann had a desire to have a family.
That's it. We met each other. I was the youngest of five children. Ann is the oldest of six children. And so we knew we wanted to be intentional about having a family. And we were very open to even having a large family. Didn't know what all that meant, but we were open to it.
So I remember when your daughter, Emily, right? Your firstborn?
Yes.
I remember when she was born, but I've missed out on a few of the births of the rest of the children because how many children do you have?
We now have 11 children.
Amazing. So that's a soccer team, correct?
That's right. So from 21 down to 3 now.
That's awesome. So does that keep you tired or keep you young?
Oh, I tell you, I am enjoying fatherhood now, I think, more than ever before. I'm 51 years old now. So, the bills are going to be paid. You know, I've already dealt with, are there going to be scuff marks on my woodwork in my home? You know, I felt at one time, you know, the prompting came to my mind, do you want a house like the Waltons or do you want a house like the old TV show Dynasty, you know, where it was always a feud in there, or Dallas, whatever it was back then. And I had to come to terms that I wanted a home like the Waltons, where we, it might not be the fanciest home. It's a clean home. It's an organized home, but it may not be the fanciest home. But there will be a lot of love, a lot of joy, a lot of laughter, and just family, you know? And so I wanted a family. So now at 51, I mean, I can't imagine not having these next group of children coming up. We have the first five. Are the older children, and they're with me actually right now in the Carolinas, and Ann is at home with the younger six because I have the first six, and she has the latter five because we're at a wedding here, and we couldn't all come at the same time. So, but I'm enjoying being a father now. I feel I'm probably more like a grandfather to the last five, but it is so much fun.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Chris Hogan. You are not just like a grandfather, because that's a whole new season, and that's incredible, and we'll have to tell you about that sometime off the air. But here's the thing that I love about the Hogan's home. Tony and I have had the joy of being there, spending the night there. It's beautiful. It's in the Midwest. It has big trees like only Illinois can grow them, and it's peaceful. And you would think, wow, the house would be cluttered or everyone would be bumping into each other. No, it's a home of respect. It's a haven. So much can be learned. And I just love it. You know, when you mentioned the Waltons, that's really true. And I'm so glad you all aren't on TV because it would just ruin the beautiful part of your home. It's just, it's what they have. It's called family. And you know what, Chris, it's really a missing peace in our culture. Let's talk about family for a minute. What do you feel like makes the core values of a family?
You know, I think that being able to love each other from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. I think that I've learned to value that more and more. because there are two things that can separate a family. When somebody gets wounded or when you feel guilty. So knowing how to deal with a wound that occurs, that may be intentional or unintentional. It could be imagined. But those things separate us. And so knowing how to deal with the wounds, how to see one another, hear one another, understand one another, and then show that you're willing to care and appreciate that person. And then you can challenge them as long as you're willing to support them and encourage them.
Okay.
And so how do you get through that healing of that wound quickly so that it doesn't fester?
Well, let's break that down a minute. I get that in theory. And by the way, you're a great teacher and you teach all around the nation and the world. You have an incredible ministry called Noble Call, noblecall.com. But what does that mean? Someone's wounded. Give me a for instance. Tell me a real story.
Well, I'll tell you, just the other day, my wife, we just finished a project outside. It was we were having our seventh child was going to go through a rite of passage into womanhood. And so she's 12 years old. She's very mature. And we were putting together the weekend was going to be a real celebration. And so we had to get the outside ready for it. And we finished pouring some concrete patio. And we had to get rid of some blocks. And my wife came out early in the morning as I was sitting out there having my time reading and having a coffee there, my latte, you know. And so she comes out early and she's smiling and everything's getting done. And so I said, well, honey, these are the last few things we need to get done. And I pointed out to the crate of blocks we needed to move. It was on a pallet. And the faucet hooked up and this and that. And so I explained it all. And then she looked at me and she says, well, I want to make sure that those bricks get moved, honey, today. Because I want tomorrow to be very relaxed because we're doing it tomorrow evening. And so I want it all done today. I thought to myself, as a man, my question is, do you think I have what it takes? And so I was like, are you kidding me? I just told you I was going to move that. Are you trying to micromanage me? Now, I didn't say that all out loud. I know better than that nowadays. But men and women have these different questions, right? The woman says, do you delight in me? And the man says, do you think I have what it takes? And so I say, I just got done saying, honey, I'm going to move that. So I'm definitely going to move that. Why would you think I'm not going to move that? I even told you I was going to move that. And she looked at me and said, well, I didn't know that you said it. I said, well, I just got done going over all that. And I was reacting. And then she was like, well, honey, I want to just be able to share my ideas and my thoughts without you feeling frustrated or reacting. I go, I know you do, honey. I said, but I guess it's just my question. And you're questioning whether or not I'm going to do it. And that just made me react. And, you know, I'm sorry that I reacted to you. But, you know, now she doesn't feel delighted. So there's a little wound there. And she said to me later that day, so we asked forgiveness. And then my son came home, and sure enough, he got all moved, and it was fine. But she said to me, you know, honey, it's amazing how when you're doing very well and then these little things come up, it's like a little wound opens up, and then love and trust flows out so fast, even if you're very, very good marriage. She says, and so could I just talk to you one more time about that? Now, most men would go, are you kidding me? We just talked about that, and really, it's your fault. And so how do you handle those kind of little things that get in the way? And if you don't deal with that wound fast, love and trust really does flow out quick. And then once you get the wound done, then you got to clear up the guilt. And so that those two things separate. And if you don't have an answer for those, you're not going to really be able to come back together and experience the joy and the intimacy. And it takes skill to do that. It takes knowledge to do that. It doesn't come natural to us. And even with me, I know all these things. I have the skill to do it, but I can still get a trigger reaction. And then I have to calm down and do not what's natural to me, but do what you know, is humility and meekness can really fix all this stuff. Well, but we don't have that much.
We are trained well in our culture to react and not respond. Right. And, you know, as an outsider, you're very task-oriented. You saw the tasks that needed to be done, and in your mind, the task is done because you said you're going to take care of it. When she's wanting to paint the picture of what she wants the weekend to be like.
Oh, yes.
And so it's interesting because both really are pure, but it's when, don't you think it's when, too, we don't trust each other that they don't trust us?
That's right.
You know what I mean?
You know, and what I'm learning, it's really mostly
wrong interpretations. If you can interpret each other accurately, you can respond appropriately. It's these wrong interpretations because we have different viewpoints. We have different questions. The woman's coming out and she's wanting to delight in collaborating and partnering for this wonderful activity. And us men, we're just trying to prove that we have what it takes and we'll get it all done.
Well, because we're talking about fathers, let's talk specifically about that happening. Have you ever wounded your children? And how have you resolved that?
You know, the children really do want a dad's approval. They really look to that. And so just a wrong, our countenance does so much damage. Because a child wants to know that their dad is glad to be with them, right? That brings a lot of joy. And dads want to know that their children are glad to be with them. I think one of the greatest joys, and you probably experienced it as grandparents, is when your children come running out or grandchildren come running out to see you, and they're so glad to see you. It's like the puppy dog with his tail wagging so much, you know? It's just wonderful to have people who are glad to be with you, especially those you love the most. And so I remember, you know, Gail coming home and my children would always run out and greet me, and then it started to fade off, and they weren't doing it anymore. I asked my wife, honey, why don't the children come out and greet me? She's, well, honey, you usually pull up and you're on the phone, and then you shush them to be quiet, you know? And so they said, well, evidently he's not as glad to see us as we are to see him. So they're not. And I thought about that. I thought, wow, that's so true, you know? And so I made a commitment that I would let my children know I am glad to be with them more than I am with anyone on the phone or other people. So just coming down and greeting them. But there's times I fail at that. There's times I fail to let them know I'm glad to be with them. Or, you know, because of an issue that comes up. So you have to be able to address the issue, but not until you've let them know you're glad to be with them. So my countenance is something that I've worked on a lot to be able to express to them my joy of being their father.
I love it when all of our children pile in our Denali and meet us at the airport when we've been out on the road for about a week or more. And they surprise us at the airport, and not just all sitting in the Denali, but they're there at the luggage, you know, carrier, and they just surprise us going, Mom, Dad, oh my goodness, that means so much as adult children. So I love family as well, Chris. Now, we only made it to 5 and you're at 11. So we've got a basketball team and your soccer team. But here's the point. Both of our families are rare because there's so many people I talk with that are afraid to have children, think children might be expensive or an inconvenience, but really it's about legacy.
Yes. You know, I think that people used to ask me all the time, well, what are you going to do for college? What are you going to do for this? Children are expensive and all that. And I really had to get in my mind, you know, what is the most important thing in life? What matters most? And some people would say, well, I only have enough love for one child. Well, that doesn't, it's not addition, it's multiplication, you know, it
right.
multiplies. So those were all questions that were asked of me. And I had to answer each one of those as they came in my own mind. Yeah, how am I going to educate them? And, you know, if God says children are a blessing, then is he a liar or is it true? So there was this walk of faith. It's really not by sight, it's by faith. And if he says they're a blessing, then I'm going to believe that. And so we began having them, and I think that I, along with anyone else, you have those fears, those insecurities of whether or not you can do this. And then as he shows himself faithful, and you're in the midst of these difficult things, I think when they're so young, you're overwhelmed, and you're tempted to say, I can't handle anymore. And that may be true for some. But we pushed through that side. And then all of a sudden you have all these older children caring for these younger children. And you see the maturity that begins to happen. So my last 5 children have the input of not only Ann and I, but there are 6 older brothers and sisters who have invested so much in them, and they're maturing so quickly. And so my older children matured because as an adult, you know, a child learns how to take care of himself. But an adult knows how to take care of himself and someone else simultaneously. So all my children learn how to take care of themselves and someone else simultaneously. So they mature quickly to where these younger children now have been invested in so greatly that they now are investing in other, our neighbors' children and others. So it's really a dynamic that you will never comprehend or understand unless you've experienced it firsthand, which I've been surprised by it all. We followed by faith, and then we saw it happen, and And I'm really amazed at the design of God in that.
Well, training is different than teaching. Teaching, you say, do this. I said to do this. Just do what I'm telling you to do. Training is time, and it's 24/7. And the beautiful thing about the different elements of training, this is what most families are missing, is they raise their children. They're very busy in activities. They're going through the fast food drive-thrus. Everything's on the move really fast. And then hoping once the kids go off to college or once they go get their jobs, then they're going to be trained as adults. But really, our homes are the training centers, correct?
Yes, I really agree with that. You know, I think women get this more than men sometimes. Men think efficiency. Well, hey, I'll go out and I'll work over here. You work over there. You work over there. You work over there. And my wife used to say, honey, why don't you just do it with the children? They like doing it with you. And one time we had this big ice storm. It knocked all these limbs out of our trees. And as you know, in Illinois, if you live on property with a lot of trees, that means a lot of leaves and a lot of sticks.
That's why we moved.
So, yeah, right. And so here we have 5 acres of tree. And this happened. My oldest child was maybe 9 years old at the time. And we had Thanksgiving coming up, and I only had one day to get it all cleaned up, which by myself would take about 4. And Ann said, why don't you do some of that stuff that you do in business and meet with the children and collaborate with them? So I thought, you know, they're too young to do that, but I was really in a deadline situation, so I did it with them. I sat them down at the table. I said, hey, look outside. Now, what do you think the preferable look should be? What would be the desired result? Our house would look like Grandpa's over there. Look at his green yard. He already had his stuff picked up by professionals, I guess. And so I said, that's right. That's the desired results. And, you know, what would be the best way to do it? Do it individually or we all work together? And they started seeing this song, Teamwork, which I don't know where they got that. And I said, okay, so we'll do it as a team. So where should we start? And I just did it with them like I would in a consulting job on a business deal. And so these kids did so well, and we went out there, and they operated so well because I took about 5 minutes to train. And then we got it done in about 3 hours, and I gave them all bonus points, and we took them out to a special ice cream. But Ann was taking pictures saying, honey, I always told you this is the way you could do it, and she taught me a lesson, doing it with your children. And they said the greatest reward was not the ice cream afterwards. It was that doing it with Daddy. They wanted to be with Daddy. And here's another thing I learned, Gail. I was walking out in my yard one day doing some projects, and my little children were coming up, and they kept interrupting me. And I felt this thought went through my mind, you know, and I felt this prompting that, you know, if you change your goal, your children wouldn't be an inconvenience to you. And I thought, well, I wonder what that means. And when my goal is to get the yard picked up, my children are an inconvenience. But when my goal is to develop and help my children grow up into mature young men and women, then they're not inconvenience to me anymore.
Great point.
So I changed my goals that day.
Great point.
And what happens now is all these little children will come up to me and, you know, I got 5 little girls. They're the youngest ones. And they always have to show me their new dress, their new shoe, their new purse, their new earring, their new lipstick, their new whatever. And it's right in the middle of all kinds of things. And I learned that if I'll give them that moment, it only takes maybe a minute or less for them to show me, twirl around, and take a little hug from me, and then look in my eyes to see if I'm happy that they came, and then they run off. Whereas if I didn't do that, it takes 20 minutes of them fussing and reacting. And so I thought, wow, what a difference it is when you have the mindset of raising children and training them, that they're not an inconvenience anymore. They're a part of your life.
I love what you said about the focus of the goal. I mean, how many arguments happen in a household because a child did not make their bed, did not clean up their room, didn't get a task done? And how about this, Chris? They embarrassed us in public because they said something they shouldn't have, or they acted, you know, unbecomingly, and somehow maybe it tarnishes our name. And what if we as parents did turn that around to where the goal became training our children? Because really, they are the legacy. They are the gift of the next generation.
Yeah, you know, usually when my children embarrass me, it's when they do something I usually do.
Yes. And I wonder, good point, because I wanted to bring this up earlier. Have you noticed the children that act just like Anne sometimes you have to deal with issues, I bet. At least we do in our family. When they act just like whatever I'm bumping into with Tony, and then I've got a child who's doing something similar, I notice that my deal with that child isn't necessarily that child. You're acting like your dad. And for goodness sakes, he gets that even more. Our children are acting like me, and he has to deal with that. So really, it's about resolving conflict. You teach a lot on that.
You know, it's true. I mean, I was just thinking of so many stories going through my mind of my little girl, Emily, standing at the top of the steps when she was maybe 10. And I was talking to Ann, and she said, "Daddy, when you treat Mama with love and kindness, it's easier for me to do it. But when you talk to her badly, then it's hard for me not to talk to her badly. So you need to talk nicely to Mama."
Whoa.
and I thought, wow. And, you know, we were having a husband-wife debate about something, you know. I said, "No, honey, I don't see it that way. And I think it should be this way." And she was, you know, trying to be very gracious with me. And so I thought, wow, that's exactly what Ann has said to me in the past, is that, "Honey, how you treat me is how the children feel free to treat me." So that really hit home that day. I thought, wow, she's saying the very thing that Anna's told me, but now I see it, and she's appealing to me. Will I do it? And, you know, I mean, I've just heard different stories of young women who have said, one time one woman said, one young lady said to her dad, "Daddy, your anger hurts me." And she said, and when I told my dad that, he said, "You will not see me do that again." And she said to her remembrance, he didn't do that again. And I thought, I hadn't had children at the time. And I thought, wow, really? And so that started to happen in my life. I said, I want to be like that dad who was able to make that commitment. Because you can do so many things right as a dad, but anger will wipe it all out, period. I've learned that you can be wonderful in so many ways, but if you don't manage anger, it will wipe out your account every time. And so getting anger under control as a dad is a major, major factor to keeping relationship.
Well, we're talking about something that actually is sort of a paradox, because we're talking about humility. And the scriptures talk about in your humility, you are strong. In your humility, mm-hmm. there is strength. And it's very humbling to go back to a child and say, "Would you please forgive me? My behavior was not correct. Or forgive me for my harsh words." And there's something about that. Chris, you and I have talked over the years, but I can tell you one thing that I know that I know that I know. If you lose the heart of your child, if you don't have access to the heart of your child, you'll never have their attention. They'll never listen to your words.
That's so, right. Well, and, you know, that requires safety. The only way you have access to the heart of a child is how safe it is, how safe you are for them to approach you, and how safe you are for them to share their heart with you. And if you're not safe, and that comes off in a lot of different ways, you can be unsafe. It doesn't have to just be anger. But yeah, you're cut off then.
Well, let's address right now the father who's listening to this saying, "It's too late. I did it all wrong. I raised my children in anger, and I'm just going to have to deal with the consequences."
You know what's amazing about that is every child, the glory of a child is their father. The glory of fathers is their children's children. What I've seen is even children of alcoholics or children of people who have been in mental institutions most of their life, every child has a hope that their dad will somehow make it, will somehow course correct. I mean, you hear of deathbed situations where the dad, for the first time, said, "Son, I'm proud of you, and would you forgive me?" I mean, I hear these stories quite often. And then I also hear the stories where the father never breaks. He never humbles himself, never asks forgiveness. And yet the healing that takes place, even on a deathbed, of saying, "Son, I'm proud of you. Daughter, I'm sorry for the way I treat you." Because I deal with so many couples, and it stems back to that dad who did not know how to relate and never made the attempt to make things right, to never heal the wound or to clear the guilt. And so it's just story after story of that. So it's never too late, because all of us hope the best for our dad. We hope for that one moment of connection. It's amazing how one moment of connection can clear up a whole path of pain in so many ways.
So true. Haven't you noticed, or have you noticed, that you can be the ugliest and have the worst day ever towards people in the family? And at the end of the day, say, would you please forgive me? I have been so off course today. And the amazing thing to me, my children are almost eager to forgive me. Like, I'm probably saying it wrong, but children have the capacity to forgive parents because they want so badly to have that relationship with parents.
That's right. And it is that humility and meekness. The other day, we were all at the table. I have this counter that all 13 of us can fit around. And we were just reading the scriptures of all things. I was reading the scriptures and I was starting to say something. And my daughter misunderstood me, thought I was saying something in a negative light about what she was doing, when I was actually saying something very positive about how they clear things out of our basement, but they're careful to maintain the things that can be passed on to the next set of children, you know? Now, I'm grateful for the clearing up of the clutter and just maintaining, and how she does that so well. She thought I was saying she gets rid of everything. And so she interrupted me. I said, hey, don't interrupt me. I'm trying to say something positive about this. And when you interrupt me like that, you do that too often. And I'm trying to say something positive, and yet you're thinking I'm saying something negative. So I said it just about like that. And then, I mean, it was total silence around that whole counter.
Oh, I'm sure.
And they were all looking.
What did you offend? You offended 12 people, right?
Oh, yeah, all 12. And so then I stopped, and then, you know, now we're going to start and read the scripture again, right? And so I looked at it and I go, hey, would you forgive me for reacting to you? And I can see what you were concerned about. I didn't have to say it like I did. And I am sorry that I reacted to you. And I think you do need to be patient at times for me to say everything I want to say before you interrupt me. But I don't need to react to you that way. And then I looked at the rest of the joke and I said, and would you all forgive me for what I did? And they all said, yes, we forgive you. And they were serious because they were offended.
Sure.
And so the fact that, you know, they didn't say, no, don't worry, Dad, it's no big deal. They didn't say that.
So 11 children offended plus your wife. That's not a good Bible study.
Oh, no. Yeah. And so then I said, and then we started reading some more. Unfortunately, I apologize then, because the next part of Proverbs was not kind to those who are proud. And so we got through it. My wife said, honey, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you making things right so quickly instead of letting the whole day go by where we would all be hurt and wondering when you're going to get things right. That was, it just allowed us to move forward in our day, all energized versus having this pain.
Don't,
I said, oh, honey, nothing Chris, that humility and meekness can't solve.
Chris, don't you think that that's what's happening with our culture? We're building upon offense after offense after offense.
Now people are so offended by everything and they don't know how to resolve it.
Oh, listen to this, Chris. I was sitting the other day at Costco and I was waiting on Tony and Connor. And I was just sitting there in my own world. I'm imagining what's happening all around me. And I'm just looking straight ahead, not realizing I was staring down someone. But when you can't see, you don't know what you're looking at. So I had a pleasant face. I'm just looking straight ahead. I never move my eyes. My imagination is going great in my head. So it's like I'm seeing. And I hear this cussing. I mean, such profanity. I could not believe it. And now I'm thinking, what on earth? Who is doing that and why? And then I hear a really soft voice in a sweet manner say to the woman, and it was our son, Connor. He says, ma'am, she can't see you. And is all I was doing, a woman who can't see is just looking straight ahead, minding her own business, being cussed out by somebody.
Oh,
and the woman, she did say to Connor, she said, oh, well, I'm sorry. Tell your mom I'm sorry.
What a paradise shift, huh?
I know. But it's so true. May God help our culture and may God help our families and our marriages.
This whole thing with the culture being offended, what people don't realize, if you don't have a means to clear up offenses, it's not by, I mean, you know, you and I, we both live in a real world. We're just as much offending others as they are offending us, right?
Right.
And so you can't be in a relationship for long with somebody without being offended. And so what is the standard, that we have to be perfect for people in order not to offend them? Well, that's not going to happen in any human relationship. And so the only hope we have is a means of, how do you handle offenses? And because that will clear up the wound and it will clear up the guilt. Because if I'm wounded, I stay away from you because I don't want to be hurt again. If I'm guilty, I stay away from you because I'm in shame. And so, I mean, this is where the gospel is so profound that people don't understand. At the core level of every relationship is the need for the gospel. And until I understood that walking in the light, that you might have fellowship one with another, that I have to walk in the light and say, would you forgive me? I offended you. And the blood of Jesus Christ will cleanse us from all of our sins. I mean, this, I do this every day with people. And nothing can cleanse that wound heal the wound or cleanse the guilt like the gospel. And so the other day, a woman was just complaining and yelling and screaming and all this stuff. And yet they had actually worked through the issue. She was something had happened. Her husband offended her. She was very mad about it. She reacted very badly about it. And she was trying to prevent this from ever happening again. I said, you know, you're going to be offended again because you're married. You'll be in this for a long time. Right. The deal is you're guilty of the way you responded to it. Would you just like to ask him for forgiveness? She goes, I would. And so she asked him for forgiveness and he forgave her. And she goes, oh my goodness, is that all I needed? I said, yeah, he asked your forgiveness. You never asked him forgiveness. Yes, you were wounded, but you were also guilty. She goes, oh, I feel so much better. So, yeah. You know, this idea of clearing up a wound and clearing up guilt, if you don't know how to do that, and psychology doesn't have an answer for that necessarily.
Well, there's a big difference between saying, I'm sorry, or I'm sorry, instead of saying, would you please forgive me?
Oh, my goodness. What a difference in the world.
Yeah.
And that willingness to keep coming back into the relationship and saying, I want to move towards you, not away from you. And your children, they're willing to forgive you. And matter of fact, if you admit your weaknesses, then it's safe for them to admit their weaknesses and they'll know they'll be accepted. So he who is forgiven much truly does love much. We have the opportunity to make every one of our children and our wives or spouses feel loved by forgiving them much and being forgiven much. That will bond a family together if you do it right.
So true. I'm thinking of that verse that says, great peace have they which love thy law and nothing shall offend them. When we love his ways, and that becomes the ultimate goal, then we can love one another and we can look beyond the offense. And Chris, you and I, we've been friends for now over 25 years and we both have offended each other and we've worked it out. I mean, it happens in friendships. It happens in marriage. It happens in the church. It happens in a community. And somebody's got to set the standard high and begin to model living without offense and loving people. And I think that if we can encourage fathers today, in fact, if I could just ask you, would you just encourage the fathers today and then would you pray for them before we close up our time? Because I know you've got a vacation to do and I'm going to breakfast with my son.
Wonderful. Well, if I could encourage fathers anyway, the biggest thing I see is as fathers, we have this question, do I have what it takes? And so often the evidence says we don't. We might actually excel in our business, but our wife doesn't smile at us and our children don't hug us anymore. And that bothers us greatly because it lets us know we don't have what it takes. And because that is our primary question, we keep coming up with a wrong answer. Sometimes in our pride, we feel like we're measuring up in certain ways, but pride makes us unrelatable. Or we don't measure up in our own mind, and that makes us feel shame. Or someone else says we're not measuring up, even when we think we are, and that makes us angry. So trying to answer that question really is a trap. Because any way we answer that question, I do measure up, I'm prideful. I don't measure up, I'm shameful. Other people say I don't measure up, I'm angry. And that is really hindering our fathering. If we simply say this, you know what? I know that in and of myself, I don't have what it takes. But I am want to trust that I can just be a vessel that God can use to love my wife and love my children, love others. So I'll just be open to his prompting. If he says apologize, I'll apologize. If he says give this gift, give this gift. If he says smile, I'll smile. So I just stay real sensitive to the prompting of what's going on in my heart. It says that God works in us to will and to do his good pleasure. So Lord, what are you wanting to do for my wife today? What are you wanting to do for my children today? And I just try to stay sensitive to a prompting. And if it's to give a gift, if it's to listen, if it's to smile, if it's to turn around and acknowledge a person, And what I'm finding is that if I just stay open as a vessel, not trying to prove myself, not trying to get my questions answered at their expense, but trying to figure out what their questions are and answer their questions proactively. It's amazing how that is changing and how that does change relationships. So fathers out there, don't allow yourself to get bogged down with your own questions so much that you don't know how to answer others' questions. Because really, you have what it takes. God says he will use you to minister to his children, to his daughters, your wife. If you'll just say, Lord, what would you have me to do now? Like Moses did when they were out in the wilderness, 3 days without water. And he said, Lord, what would you have me to do? And he said, throw this piece of wood in there and say that I'm God, your healer. So when things aren't going right, just say, Lord, what would you have me to do now? And you'll be surprised at some of the promptings that will come to your mind and your heart. And when you do them, they'll say, wow, thank you. You didn't get wrapped up in your own question. You didn't get wrapped up in your own worries and your own inadequacies. But you just went ahead and you offered something to someone else. And you're going to be surprised that you are much more blessed in giving and answering others' questions than just trying to get your own question answered. So the Lord bless you men with the grace to be his servant, to be his vessel that he can live through and minister through and answer the questions that God does delight in your wife. He does delight in your children, that they can delight in who they were made to be, that you all can delight as a family to do God's will, and you can delight others with the God-given gifts and talents that he has given each one of you. Be blessed to be a blessing. Amen, fathers.
That's awesome, Chris Hogan. Thank you so much for taking time on a busy trip with your children. I'm just so grateful to you and wish you the best, and give my love to Ann and all of your team.
Well, Tony and Gail, you have invested much in us, and when you taught us how to do the blessing before we even had children, that has gone on for 25 years now with us. And that investment you made in us, may it come back much more greatly in the next generation, and may you get a great return on that investment in us as well.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great time. Talk to you soon. This is Gail, and I just wanted to say that each life is not only valuable, but it has purpose. Perhaps you'd like to hear another story about a family that should have never been, and yet they are. It's our story, Seeing Beyond, with a foreword by Zig Ziglar. You can find this book and other resources at GailMcWilliams.com/tools.